A lot of baskets converted last night. A lot of field goals converted in that Kings big win over the Timberwolves. 141 to 130.
Yeah.
Doesn't that have you scrambling to the record books to see, and hey, what's the highest scoring game in NBA history?
No, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, what do you think? Because we had 271. And it turns out the highest scoring game in NBA history, today is the anniversary of that game.
Oh, boy. I'm just shot in the dark. 315 points?
You're a little light.
Am I? Okay.
Yeah. It happened this day, 1983, and it was a triple overtime game. And it was Detroit 186, Denver 184.
Solid.
370 points.
What year was this?
1983.
Okay. I want to know the leading scorers, but okay.
Yeah, I got it for you.
You do?
Let's see here. Four players scored at least 40 points.
Sure.
Kiki Vandeweghe at 51. Okay. Isaiah Thomas, 47. John Long, 41. Kelly Trepuca, 35 for the Pistons.
He can fill it up, Whitey.
Kiki Vandeweghe, 51. Alex English with 47. And Dan Issel had 28.
That's when teams weren't afraid to shoot. Put it up. That's actually what the Nuggets always did. With those exact teams, that was the Vandeweghe, Alex English, you know, put it up.
Mm-hmm.
Get up the floor and put up a shot. Let's go.
186-184. I felt like I was watching one of those games. Obviously, last night was only 99 points shy of that. But it was regulation. It wasn't triple overtime.
186-184. That's a lot of mid-range jumpers, Whitey.
We also had a 171-166 game, the Spurs over the Bucks in 82. And then the Warriors beat the Nuggets 162-158 in 1990.
Okay. So this game at least put you in the mind of that because it was bucket, 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 bucket. The fourth quarter was 45-38.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Kings have, you know, they've scored 140 twice now in the season. So, you know, it's never out of the question with the way that they play. I was a little bit surprised because Minnesota's defensive efficiency rating, we were talking about this yesterday, had improved so dramatically since the Jimmy Butler trade. But this week, they've sagged a little bit, let's put it that way.
You know, I watch the Timberwolves, and I like Karl-Anthony Towns, and I like Wiggins, and, you know, Covington's a solid player. It's an amazing story what Derrick Rose is doing. By the way, do you think a former MVP can be comeback player of the year? Some people have said, I don't see why not, but some have said, the guy was an MVP. You can't be comeback player of the year if you were an MVP.
It depends how far down you were.
Yeah,
of course
I
you
agree.
Can.
But anyway, so you agree with me.
Yeah.
Why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Depends what you've come back from.
Absolutely, yeah.
I watched the Timberwolves, and I can see why Tibbs thought Jimmy Butler was going to help them, because they just seem at times almost passive as a team. They're talented.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got guys like Taj Gibson, and, you know, Šarić is tough. But
yeah.
They have, it seems like Karl-Anthony Towns and Wiggins sometimes are just a little, yeah.
Disengaged.
We're just having fun out here.
Sometimes,
we don't
want
anybody to get hurt or anything.
You can really see the role, and he didn't play a huge role last night, but you can really see the role of Covington there, you know, to take up energy, to be an energy. Obviously, he's a really good player or it wouldn't matter, but he also plays hard, and he's around the ball a lot. And last night it didn't add up to much, but I can see why he is important, and he's probably got a lot to do with their improved defensive rating.
I will say Wiggins has played and shot much better since the trade. His shooting numbers for the year are way down, but in December they're way up, and last night he hit 10 of 15 for 25. But the Kings, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eight guys in double figures, and I'm not talking guys with 11. You know, 25, 14, 20, 13, 20, 17, 17.
Yeah. And, you know, shooters and shooters and shooters. You know, Bagley is going to
guard somebody at some point?
No.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But offensively, he really presents a great challenge because he's around the bucket a lot. He gets a lot of second chance looks, and he winds up at the free throw line a lot because of it, because he's right there for the ball. And you got to foul him.
17 and 10.
Yeah.
And he had three assists.
Knocks down his free throws.
Yeah, he did last night coming around in that department.
That's a big deal. Well, think how huge that's going to be for him. It's just like it is for Cauley-Stein. You know, there at one point last night, the Timberwolves' strategy with Cauley-Stein was very obvious, and it worked early, or the first time through.
Let me make my pro Bagley over Doncic argument here, and I know you're not going to agree, and I know maybe you should. I'm not even sure I'm right.
Well, I don't even know where it's going. So,
yeah.
You know, this is I just know what I thought when the draft was made.
Doncic is, and I wasn't big on Bagley at the time, but I'm just saying I can see why they did it, I think, after games like last night. I think what Bagley gives you when he's playing well is different than what Doncic gives you, and I think they felt, we already have that. Not that, you know, we don't have anybody who can do really what Bagley does. We need that. So I'm not sure. But when I look at it, I can I could understand how if that was their thinking. And after games like last night, I could see how, well, maybe they were right about that.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything bad about what Doncic brings you. It's just, well, that's not really what that team needed. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it's entire. Look, it may work out that, it already is working out to a certain extent, that what they have is a good mix, that they might have. They're not a finished product or anything like that. And, yeah, they would still like, you know, for the three to be really like every night.
Well, they just don't really have a legit NBA three.
But with that said, the pieces that they do have function well together. I don't want to get too carried away with chemistry or anything like that, but you can see that they are a good fit. Their personality, team personality is a good fit too. And that's the kind of stuff that gets you through bad games at times where, you know, it'd be easy to start turning on each other. It's not such a big deal in a night like last night where every open look seems to result in a three getting knocked down and the bench is going crazy. It's more about how they seem to get along that'll maybe carry them through a tough week or even just a bad one night. That's they seem built to share.
They've beaten Minnesota twice now, and I know it's kind of two different Minnesota teams. But to me, that's significant because I look at these teams, and right now anyway, Kings are better than Minnesota.
Yeah.
And we'd have never said that before the season started, obviously.
Well, I think they present problems that Minnesota's hadn't been able to solve, really. And it starts with Fox. But I think you're going to wind up saying that with a lot of teams. A lot of teams are going to say, yeah, he's a problem. And particularly if he's going to do, you know, anything from outside. He put up two threes last night. But the one that he made had come off. I think they were coming off a bad possession, and he had had two bad possessions in a row. I think he turned it over once and got denied at the rim once, and came right back down in a kind of a scramble mode and just took the open three and knocked it down. And I thought, man, if he's going to make threes on any regular basis, then teams are really not going to know what to do with him exactly.
Yeah, tough to guard if he's making shots.
Yeah,
in addition to just dribbling past you with blazing speed.
He's faster than you are.
I don't know.
No,
that
not
is.
You.
That he is. That was probably, but
that was the royal you.
Hasn't been proven.
If he's faster than they are, not you.
Hasn't been actually proven. These player personnel decisions looks like they hit the jackpot with Fox. Maybe Bagley. We'll see. But it's tough in sports, and that's why it's tough. You can understand for a guy like Mark Davis to be trying to explain why they being the Raiders traded Amari Cooper. And Mark Davis, I think this probably puts it to bed, right? I think he's explained it. If you're a Raider fan, you can understand now. Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, quote, Mark Davis on the Amari Cooper trade. He was a great, great player. We always had the fastest guy in the field no matter what. It just didn't work out in our system. He also added, in the future, we might be saying, damn. So...
I think someone
stop talking, Mark Davis!
Might have been in that same interview, someone asked him what he thought his dad would have thought about Cooper. And he said, oh, he would have loved him. I'm like, you have to stop talking. You're not helping. Not helping.
And he thinks he is helping, doesn't he? I'll just explain this to you. Look, here's
yeah,
the deal.
I guess. I think on some levels he does. He thinks, hey, if I just tell him, I have an answer. Mm-hmm. When I tell him my answer, everything's going to get better.
System fit.
Yeah.
Guy catches passes really fast.
Yeah. Right. He's really fast and he's a great, great player.
Yeah.
And thus, he wasn't a fit for you? Or how's that work? I think part of the problem is you're trying to explain things that have darker explanations that you don't want to give. If that's the case, if, hey, look, he was going to make money and there was every indication that he was going to go the route of Khalil Mack. That's what was reported.
Right.
It's
also possible that there are darker explanations that have nothing to do with the finances. And I'm not saying those aren't legitimate. We don't know for sure, but it makes sense they would be. But it's also possible that, you know, Amari Cooper wasn't happy there. He wasn't productive. What was the problem? How much of it was him? How much of it was the coaches? How much of it was lack of chemistry, how much of it was a lack of confidence Derek Carr had in him because he dropped so many passes. Mm-hmm. Those are all legitimate.
But of course they are.
Even if that's true, I think they owed it to themselves as a team to resurrect him, as Gruden suggested they would before the season started.
That's exactly what he said. That's why I was interested by that transaction, because Gruden, when he was still full of himself about the winning, he looked at Cooper and said, come on. I don't know what happened before, but wait till we get him. Here we go. And clearly something changed. Either it was contract or it was even Gruden saying, well, it isn't going to happen here. It isn't going to happen with him and Carr. And without a doubt, Carr found a new favorite target really fast, right? Not that Cooper was ever his favorite. But he found Jared Cook, like, as soon as Cooper was gone, Jared Cook just took over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Carr can't find him fast enough. He looks for him on every play. So something was going wrong. But will they regret trading him? I'm sure they already do. Among other things, you helped another team get way better.
He said in the future they might be saying, damn.
Yeah.
But not yet.
Probably going to say it when you find out what Dallas's first-round pick is worth.
Yes.
That's when I would say it.